Greetings, everyone. This is Maggie Ostara, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Becoming Sovereign, Journey with the Archetypes. This is session number 6, The Wise Woman, and this is part 1, Wisdom Goddesses, the Triple Goddess, and the Rise of the Wise Woman. So we are diving into this beautiful wise woman archetype today, and she has had many iterations over the course of time, and today we're going to be dialing into some history and then into our mentors and models, and then into some questions for you that will be leading you into your part 2 and your meditation. So let's start out by actually inquiring into what is wisdom. I learned this particular model from Wyatt Watson some years ago. He was speaking at an event of Evan Pagan's that I was at, and I really liked this way of thinking. He's an expert in learning how to learn, and this particular equation has always stuck with me. So let's just go through it together. So data and information, right? That is just basically information. We are awash in information these days, right? So we're in the information age. We have more information about just about anything that you would want to know about than ever before, and is more readily available. But data and information, without being integrated, without being digested and integrated, is not particularly useful. So data and information with experience, right? Taking that, reflecting on it, digesting it, analyzing it perhaps, or putting it into action and then integrating it first gives us knowledge. It gives us a sense of knowledge. So knowledge is more elevated than information. Knowledge plus more experience brings us understanding. And this is one of the key things for us to get is that this is, wisdom is not simply about knowing information. It's not just about having absorbed and being able, memorizing a lot of things, for example. It's really about taking it and making it real in our lives. So knowledge plus experience equals understanding. And then in order to get to wisdom, we need to take that understanding and have a lot more experience. And that is why wisdom is typically associated with being a bit older, because it takes time to have that much experience. It takes time to take in the different information that we have, the knowledge that we develop, the understanding that we acquire through our experience, and then really take it and live it out in our life and be able to reflect on it over time, that leads us into wisdom. So I just invite you to consider this for yourself and to consider, where are the places in your life do you feel that you may be awash in information, but you don't really have, you don't really understand it, or where you maybe have taken it on and experienced it, and you have an understanding, maybe even wisdom about it. And so that may be something that you've dived into. You've had a lot of time in your life when you've been engaging with it. And I invite you to have this model as we go along and as you look at your own life. And actually, this model is one of the reasons that I designed this course the way that I did, so that I didn't just give you the information, for example, that's in this first lesson, but I wanted to give you meditations and the writing prompts that would inspire you to take this in and apply it to your life and to start to integrate it more into your regular life and to see how it shows up for you, because that is how you're going to develop knowledge and then understanding, and then wisdom in relation to the pillars of feminine sovereignty and the 6 feminine sovereign archetypes. So let's dive into our common ways of thinking about wisdom. So very often that has to do with having read a lot of books. When I went to go and look for images about wisdom, what came up primarily were two different themes. One was books and people reading books, and the other one was owls. Interesting, right? So the books we can understand, and notice that this particular owl has books also. So books and then also with some glasses, which gives us a sense that this is also an older owl, right? It's an older owl who has developed some wisdom. We can think about owl who was in Winnie the Pooh, and owls have become a very common part of our popular culture, being associated with wisdom. And books are kind of obvious, right, to be associated with wisdom. But as I said a moment ago, if you all you do is read books, but then you don't have life experience, and also if you don't take what you learn in books and then reflect on it and see how it then integrates into your life, you're not going to actually develop wisdom. So where did this owl associated with wisdom come from? Well, it turns out that the owl came from the goddess Athena, the Greek goddess Athena. You can see her here with her little owl flying along alongside her. And there were these coins that were made. These are ancient Greek coins that has Athena on one side and then her owl on the other side. So Athena is the Greek goddess of wisdom, but she's also known as the goddess of war. And her type of wisdom is actually a very cerebral, intellectual type of wisdom. And it's not necessarily in alignment with the definition of wisdom that I just gave you. But this is one of our oldest notions of where wisdom comes from, and one of our female figures. One of the things to know about Athena is that she was the goddess who she did not have a mother. She actually came forth from the forehead of Zeus, who was the head of the gods, and she was known as his favorite daughter, which is interesting because she was definitely more warlike than she was of what we might think of as a wise woman. You can see here she's always depicted with a shield, that she came out of Zeus's forehead here with her shield on her arm, right? She, not in this particular depiction, but it's said that she came forth in a complete suit of armor with her spear and her sword coming out of Zeus's forehead. So here we have this bringing together this conflation of war and intellect and wisdom. Interesting, right? So this is wisdom as the basis of Western culture, because if you look at how Western culture, the history of Western culture is told often, it is begins with the Greek culture. Now, if we go around the world to the other side, we can find that the Hindu goddess of wisdom is Saraswati. And she's from India and that area of the world. And she has a very different tone. And so she is also the goddess of music and goddess of the arts. And that in this notion of wisdom, it's not just an intellectual wisdom at all. And she does have books. You can see here she's got a book in her left hand, but she also is always shown with this particular instrument that it said that she developed. And she's also sitting on a lotus, which represents her enlightenment. So it's not that she just has a cerebral intelligence. She also has this spiritual intelligence and this spiritual wisdom as well. And in this particular picture, she, as you can see, she's got big books, which is why I wanted to show you this one. She also is always shown in white, because that is the purity of her wisdom. It's meant to represent the purity of her spiritual wisdom. And she has four arms so that she can always be playing her instrument, as well as being engaged in her spiritual practice with her mala in her right hand, and then engaged in a book which she has in her left hand. So she is one of our early figures of multitasking. But she really represents, I always think of Saraswati as more of the goddess of the arts. But when I was looking this up and doing research on it, I discovered that she was the goddess of wisdom and the goddess of knowledge as well. So I think that this representation is more in alignment with the definition that I gave you before, because it's not just a cerebral kind of single pointed type of wisdom. It's much more of a full rounded experiential type of wisdom as well, because what are the arts? What is music? What is singing? What are painting? But experiential practices. And so I find this to be very attractive. So you can just see for yourself where you may have been influenced in your life around this idea that wisdom that is really cerebral, it's really knowledge, it's really based in data, in facts, in left-brained analysis, which would be more of the Athena model, or if you have been trained and what you feel is more resonant for you is also includes the right-brained arts, the expressive arts, and the musical arts and the visual arts, as well as taking in information and reading the wisdom of the ages through books that may be passed down in that particular way. And one of the things that human design shows us is that we need both the logical and the analytical, and we need the right-brained, more sensing, more experiential, and we need the intuitive. And so all of those are valued inside of human design. And so I would say that and also this model are helping to balance out that more Greek Athenian model. Let's see what you resonate with more for yourself, and maybe reflect on that in your journal prompts for this week. I wanted to also include the Kalich, who is has a variety of different emanations. She shows up in lots of different ways. I'm just mentioning here as the goddess of winter. She's also known as a hag and a wise woman. And she shows up in a variety of different ways. But I was particularly interested to find this image of her with an owl. So we have here, and I don't really know if the owl is comes from a influence from Athena and her owl, or whether or not this is something that is more ancient in the Gaelic tradition. That is something that would take more research to uncover. I certainly know that the association of owl with wisdom, and also with wise women in particular, is very, very common and seems to be quite deeply embedded in our archetypes of the wise woman and our archetypes of wisdom, whatever its origin is. And then I also just wanted to mention here that in the story of patriarchy that we have been living with for a very long time now, millennia, we have seen that wise women, old women, can be demonized. And that if there were older wise women, and as we see, like within this Gaelic tradition, right, this is an honored representation of a wise woman, and it predates the invasion of Romans into that part of Western Europe, into England and Ireland and Scotland. And so over time, one of the things that we get is this demonization of old women. And this is, of course, from Hansel and Gretel, which is a story that was picked up by the Brothers Grimm in around the year 1800. So it's a traditional story about a woman living out in the forest who created a gingerbread house to lure children in so that she could take them in and put them in cages and fatten them up and then bake them in her oven and eat them. So she was a cannibal. So she is obviously a manipulative, untrustworthy, and dangerous figure. And this is a reconfiguration of this notion of the woman who is living on her own. She's often an herbalist. She could be a midwife. She could be a wise woman who has a variety of different knowledges through her long life. Who is living out on the edge of the forest in her own house. And that figure is also one that has come down through history to us. And but she here has been demonized into this kind of hag witch type of a figure. And so I wanted to bring this up because we see over the period of time that that we just went through from the Greeks all the way up into 1800s, that the women have really been reduced to having value through their beauty and through their reproductive capacity. And that is something that we saw through, millennia. And of course, through their other forms of labor, whether that was agricultural or whatever it might have been, but that really this kind of stereotype of beautiful women being valuable, who are of childbearing age and who can bear children and who can help pass on the family lineage and so on. And if that is the case, then these older women become are no longer valuable. Because they are no longer beautiful, according to this standard, and they have moved past the childbearing age. And so one of the things that we see is the demarcation of old woman to be menopause, when you've stopped your cycles and you are no longer fertile and you've moved into that phase of life, and that there is this sense that your life is over in any meaningful way. And this is a legacy that I think we are really working with very actively in our culture today, because we are healthier longer, at least in certain parts of the world and for certain of us. And so with longer life, long life periods, we're looking at not so much just ending our important lives after our childbearing years, but what is happening in those many, many years afterwards. So this is a symbol of the triple goddess, which is an ancient symbol. It's one that has been picked up by neo-paganism and the kind of recent reincarnations of ancient goddess culture. Here is a representation of one version of triple goddess, and there are many different versions of triple goddess, which I am not going to go into here. But what is important for us is this notion of the three stages of life here, where we have maiden, mother, and crone. And so, just as I was talking about before, as we've got women here who are identified by and valued by their relationship to men inside of patriarchal culture, which is maiden women are beautiful and potential sexual partners and potential marriage partners. Then you have mother, who is the fertile woman who has been married to a man whose role is then to be producing children, to be taking care of a household, to be doing the labor that is involved with that and the labor of supporting her husband and whatever it is that he's doing. And then after her childbearing years are over, she moves into being a crone, which is an old woman after menopause and no longer sexually desirable and no longer fertile. And so her desirability and her value has gone down significantly. So there's two different aspects of this triple goddess. One is a bringing forth of the natural cycles of a woman's life in a positive way, showing that women are connected to the phases of the moon. For example, the goddess is often shown this version of womanhood, and her relationship to the goddess is shown through the phases of the moon, where she's waxing when she's younger, she's full when she's pregnant and mother phase, and then when she's waning, she's moving into her crone years. And so there is a beautiful and beneficial aspect to that that has been brought forth in this neo-pagan religion or neo-pagan spirituality. But there's also this way that it shows up, as I just demonstrated, inside of patriarchy, that shows that women, her value has to do with her beauty and her childbearing, and how as a crone she does not have that so much. I do think that inside of this kind of feminist neo-pagan spirituality, there is a valuing of the crone years, of the wise women years. But what's also happening is the creation of another phase, which some are calling the queen years or the sovereign years, which are the years after menopause and before old age. Because now there's really a significant period of time. Often there's a good 15, even 20 years there, depending on when you become menopausal and how well you take care of yourself. I would consider myself at 61 inside of that phase. I've been postmenopausal for a number of years now, and I don't consider myself in old age. I consider myself in my wise women years. So I consider this a wise woman time. And so there's different ways that this is getting reconfigured and explored. And so I would just invite you to consider for yourself what these archetypes really, because these are all archetypes, what they mean for you. And I know a lot of women who have rejected that the idea of the crone, because it feels decrepit, physically has lost physical vitality, no longer has sexual energy. Whereas, you know, there are many women who can have a lot of sexual energy all the way through to being very elderly. It's kind of a myth that you lose your libido, actually, for many women. So just see how that is for yourself. And also, I would invite you to consider, how do you hold what you might consider older women? One of the things I have noticed in this phase of my life is that I have become less visible than I was even 10 years ago, and certainly 20 years ago when I was 40. And I was more conventionally attractive. at that time. And so there is an interesting piece around women becoming less and less visible, which literally means not being seen by people in the world. And so you might just look at that for yourself in considering, how do you hold older women? How do you hold women in their, those wisdom years, if you will, between menopause and older age, whether you want to call that wisdom years or queen years or sovereign years, whatever terminology you might want to use for it or that you've heard used. Or if you're in those years, how do you hold that for yourself? What does that feel like for you, and what brings meaning into it for your lives? Okay, so let's look at the awakened and empowered sovereign state of the wise woman, okay, and this archetype as we are working with her. So the wise woman in her awakened state has developed her wisdom through study, profound life experience, and deep personal reflection. She makes connections between many different aspects of life as she feels, knows, and navigates the great web of life. She's intuitive and sensitive, as well as learned. The breadth as well of the as the depth of her knowledge and experience help her to see the big picture and many different points of view. She's an excellent mentor and teacher, able to access and appreciate many different perspectives. She's articulate with strong points of view of her own that she's not afraid to share when the time is right. She speaks with the authority of experience and shares teaching stories that benefit the tribe. At the same time, she has nothing to prove and listens deeply in a way that honors and respects others. She compassionately helps her people see new possibilities by illuminating then reframing their unquestioned assumptions and expectations. Like all true sovereigns, the wise woman fosters confidence in others, leading them to the authority of their own learning and experience. She understands that everyone's life and voice matters, and she uses that principle to guide her work in the world. So this version of Wise Woman is heavily influenced by human design, and in part two of our lesson today, we'll be diving into that part. Well, what I want to emphasize here is that she has, her wisdom has really helped her to not need to prove anything, to have emotional intelligence is a big part of our wise woman. She is at a point in her life where she can listen to things and take in people's point of view and value them and care about them and be influenced by them in ways that are beneficial. But she also doesn't need to be overtaken by other people's points of view just because she listens to them. But she has been able to get to the point through her life experience that she can have multiple points of view at the same time. And this, in many spiritual traditions, is considered the highest state of enlightenment, actually, is that ability to hold multiple points of view at the same time. And this is, I'll just drop this in here and we'll talk a little about it more in the part two, but it's difficult, it can be difficult for people with defined ajnas because they tend to have more of a single pointed focus. And so if you have a defined ajna, just know that that might take some more practice for you than for some others. But she is kind of almost beyond an expert. When we think of experts, we think of people who have a deep knowledge, if you will, in a particular area. And Wise Woman has, in a way, almost gone beyond being an expert in, because she has such a breadth of her knowledge as well as depth. And she's able to take in, she has this sense of always learning, always being open to learning. But she has this incredible ability to listen to others. So let's dive into some mentors and models for wise women. I wanted to tell you about Maria Gombutas, if you did not know about her. She was an archaeologist who was a classical archaeologist and was highly influential in the 1960s through doing a lot of excavations and wrote books on the early histories of old Europe. And so we're talking really, really ancient. And through the process of doing that work over a number of decades, she got deeper and deeper in her excavations and got into older and older materials. And what she began to find in the very oldest artifacts were a variety of different sculptures, shards of pottery, and so on. And she developed an understanding of a goddess culture, or cultures that were relatively egalitarian, and that were not based in war. She said that there really weren't weapons at a part of the excavations that she found. And there were these different representations of female figurines that often had were either pregnant or had breasts or had vaginas. And she developed an entire, she has a book called The Language of the Goddess. She developed a whole lexicon based on the symbology on this pottery. Her work was highly controversial. And as you might imagine, there were a lot of her male colleagues who dismissed her work in her interpretations. And in the research that I have done, both in the past and more recently, it looks like there's a general acceptance that her work cannot be disproven. So there's nothing that disproves her work, but it's also open to interpretation. Her work proved to be particularly influential during the 1970s and 80s, the 80s really, and so on, and moving forward, among what became the neo-pagan movements, and that were talked about a goddess culture that predated patriarchy and spurred an enormous amount of interest and scholarship among feminist historians and archaeologists, and women's spirituality became the basis of a huge body of work and a lot of different rituals and practices, and so became very, very influential. Starhawk was one of the co-founders of the Reclaiming Collective, which is a neo-pagan spirituality group. It's been going on for decades now. She's also a highly revered author and activist. I mentioned her in the visionary lesson. She wrote a book called The Fifth Sacred Thing, which is, I don't know how old it is now, 20, 25 years old, which is a very interesting book that I highly recommend. But she wrote a lot of different books, including ones about reclaiming goddess culture. That is often based in the nature and the cycles of the nature and this equinoxes and the solstices and the cross quarters and so on. And so Starhawk is definitely a wise woman. Maria Gombutas definitely became a wise woman. And Starhawk is one of those figures who could show up in a variety of our feminine sovereign archetypes, but I decided to put her here in Wise Woman, both because of her experience at this point and also because of the work that she does in terms of building off of Maria Gombutas's work and bringing that understanding and that inspiration really that there we haven't always lived in a time that was based in hierarchy and brutality and coercion and control, which are the hallmarks really of patriarchy. But that it is possible for people to live together in relatively non-hierarchical relationships and in a more sustainable and reverent and honorable relationship with the earth and with nature. And so this is a whole area that you might want to look into if that is something that you feel would be rejuvenating for you, inspiring for you. And I think that there's a lot at this time as developing our feminine sovereignty and our understanding as our role to be helping to relate to our earth in a way that can help regenerate our ecosystems and our relationship with our forests and our wetlands and our rivers and oceans and so on, we can look to these type of understandings of how people have done that in the past. Certainly ecofeminism, which I did mention a little bit last time and we'll go into more with Earth Mother, arises out of this and also is related to the understandings and practices and rituals and perspectives of different indigenous cultures around the world as well. Clarissa Pinkola Estes is a New York Times bestselling author of The Women Who Run With the Wolves is her best known book. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for 145 weeks. That is a long time. That's almost 3 years. And she's a Jungian analyst. That's what she's known for in terms of her understanding of archetypes. So she's someone that you might want to go and check out if you don't know her work already, as she is strong in the archetypal realm. I find her to be a very deep, wise woman who is coming out of Mexican culture, Latin American culture. I love this particular post that she did on Facebook. Stand with us or stand aside. We represent no nation. We represent rightful indignation. We are under the flag of the Sacred Heart. Scar Clan, never mistake our tears, fears, or gentlenesses for weaknesses. We are relentlessly new school kick ass instead of old school kiss ass. And I just love that. And we'll pick up on this towards the end of the lesson today, regarding this sense of when you get to be an older woman, you don't need to prove anything and you don't really care so much about what other people think. But I want to just emphasize here that Dr. Estes' work with the Women Who Run With the Wolves is a deep dive into the wild woman archetype and the understanding of our undomesticated selves and a very wise look in the sense of looking into our experience with this cross-culturally and archetypally. And she herself has led a rich and varied and an adventurous life. And so if you're attracted to her, I encourage you to go find out more about her. Toni Morrison is one of my personal fan of hers. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning and Nobel Prize winning author. She's a professor also of literature and of writing. She has a lot of, I don't know how many books she has to her name, I think about 8 novels. She's a novelist primarily, but she's also an essayist. I had the privilege to write an article on her book Beloved that did develop some significance when I was a professor. And I found her work, she started with The Bluest Eye, but she has a lot of different novels to her name. And she is definitely a wise woman in the sense that she brings to light the understanding of the African American experience and the different perspectives inside of the African American experience, so that it's not simply a matter, it's not monolithic at all. She draws incredibly wonderful characters that enable us to understand and kind of get inside the heart and mind and soul to a degree, which is what incredible novelists are able to do, of the different characters that she has who are both present time and somewhat older, like in the 1950s. Her book Jazz is set in the 20th century, but mid-20th century, and then Beloved, which is set in the mid-18th century. I'm sorry, 19th century, mid-1800s. And so she has an incredible depth and knowledge, but also life experience. And she represents life experience to us through her work in incredibly compelling ways. Alice Walker is also a Pulitzer Prize winning author. She is also a very deep and wise woman. One of my favorite quotations from her is, she's also a poet, is difficult times require furious dancing, which I quote with some regularity and practice as much as I possibly can. And she also has a number of highly influential books, probably the most famous of which is The Color Purple, which was also made into a film. And so I would highly recommend you check her out. Again, another deeply wise woman, a lot of experience. She is the one who coined the phrase or the term womanist, as she wanted to find a way to name feminist movement and feminist perspectives from the point of view of herself and others as women of color. And so she helped open that piece out. I highly recommend that you check her out. Caroline Casey is a visionary activist astrologer, a radio show host, and also an author. She's known, I think, probably mostly for her radio show she does on KPFA every week, and her coyote trickster mentality. And she's extraordinarily learned, and she applies it through her breadth of knowledge in terms of bringing anyone into her radio show that she says forwards democracy. And she is deeply committed to the environmental movement and to our sustainable future and to a more equitable future. And all of these women that I have represented so far are among the most articulate people that I have ever had the opportunity to either read or listen to or meet. And I consider their, again, this breadth of knowledge, its depth of knowledge, its life experience, and their ability to help open up our perspectives to things that we might not already know about. And I would encourage you to go check out her, Caroline Casey's radio show. And she also does rituals on all of the pagan holy days, which are the equinoxes and the solstices. And you can find those on her website. Susan Weed is a has no formal degrees, which I love. She left high school and she left college, and she apparently wasn't interested in getting any degrees. But she is a definitely a wise woman. She actually created the Wise Woman Herbal. She's known as a green witch and as a very beloved herbalist. And she's written 7 books that are about women's health through using herbalism, a variety of different herbs, primarily in Western herbology. But she also trains apprentices, and she does correspondence courses. She's a teacher. She's a mentor. I love this picture of her reading to these young women, which really, for me, represents a lot about a wise woman, which is being here with the youngers and helping to pass on her knowledge, her understanding, and her wisdom to the youngers. And again, I think this is something that all of these models and mentors are exceptionally good at. LaDonna Brave Bull Allard is a historian of the Lakota people or the Sioux tribes, and she, her people are right there in the Standing Rock area, where there were so many, there was a movement to help stop a pipeline of going through their area. It did eventually go through, but that winter really of activism that was led by the Lakota people and then contributed to by other people who were not of neither Lakota or Native heritage did definitely raise awareness around the environmental impact of the pipeline, but also the way that indigenous people in particular, but also communities of color, are disproportionately impacted by negative environmental consequences of things like oil development, in this case a pipeline, or whether it's fracking, whether it's mining, all kinds of different ways of extracting power really from the earth. I mean, that's really what all of those are about extracting power, which we then consume. And so she was a important voice, and she's bringing her understanding of history to this modern day situation. And all of these women who I have mentioned here are engaged in our perceptions and our activism, our engagement in our life. Even the writers are in that way also, because they are helping to shift the way that we think about ourselves and our relationship to our world and our relationships to each other, so that we can create, again, a more equitable and just and sustainable future. I just had to include Tina Turner, who just turned 81, and who is definitely a wise woman and a model, not so much because of what she's put out per se, so much as through her life. She is a woman who's had, started out with a very difficult situation, an abusive marriage, and was able to free herself from that and to develop an incredible career and to continue being an artist for decades. And is still a strong, beautiful woman at 81. And so she's definitely a wise woman in her life is the example of the life of treating herself well, of staying connected to your purpose and of continuing to engage in what matters to you. So let's take a big breath and a sip of water. And I want you to take a moment here just to consider who you might have, if any of these stimulated you, if you share any of those as wise women mentors and models for you, or if you have ones of your own that you maybe thought about while I was sharing some of my favorites with you. Who are some women who have gotten to their wisdom years, or maybe are younger than that, but have really helped you to be able to understand life from a bigger point of view, maybe helped you to understand some of the patterns of how things occur, to be able to appreciate the natural world and what it has to provide for us, what benefit we can get from paying attention to the cycles of the solstices and the equinoxes, or of taking good care of ourselves so that we can be healthy into our later years, or for our activism and how we choose to participate. So just think about that and make a note for yourself. And in your meditation, you'll have a chance to dive into that even more. And so take a moment now and consider who might be some wise women that you have in your life. Who do you know? And how do you kind of hold older women, wise women in your life? Do you value them? Do you seek them out? Do you choose to spend time with them? What does that mean for you? And if so, what is that about for you? And how do you hold growing older? How do you hold growing older? We live in such an age-phobic society, a youth-worshipping society. Aging is considered kind of a horrible thing, generally speaking. And so this is why some of the older women become invisible. And how do you hold gray hair, having hair go gray? I've been seeing a lot more women with gray hair and even gray hair hairstyles than I used to see. And so how do you hold gray hair? What does it mean to you? Do you consider it women's wisdom? Do you consider it something that needs to be colored? What is it like for you? Then I wanted to complete this part of our lesson for today with a few different posts that I found that I think are represent some attitudes of wise women. With age comes inner strength and the power of not giving a shit what others think. Today, I'm rocking who I've fought to become. My darling girl, when are you going to realize that being normal is not necessarily a virtue? It sometimes rather denotes a lack of courage. Aunt Frances. At 70 years old, if I could give my younger self one piece of advice, it would be to use the words fuck off much more frequently. Helen Mirren. A wise woman wishes to be no one's enemy. A wise woman refuses to be anyone's. Maya Angelou.